Coming up next on the Virginia Voice, we have a very special program for you. This is a recording done a number of years ago on an album, an old LP. The narrator is Joseph Cotton, and the director was Brick Ryder. This is She's Called Virginia.
She's Called Virginia.
Mother of Presidents, the Old Dominion, capital of the Confederacy,
Mother of States. She's called Virginia, land of the Virgin Queen, home of patriots and planters, dreamers and idealists, men of vision who carved out of the wilderness the very essence of what America is today. And now, she's a bustling, progressive lady with her eyes on the stars and her feet planted firmly from the top of the Appalachians to the rolling surf of the Atlantic. And she's done more to bring about what we know as democracy and progress and the good life than anyone might imagine. I know because I am one of her native sons, and I'm proud to call myself a Virginian. I am Joseph Cotton, and this, in part, is the story of Virginia. A cold December day on the River Thames. Gray skies overlook three tiny ships huddled closely to the dock, taking on the last provisions for a long trip. King James I has granted permission to a group of Englishmen to establish a colony in Virginia. Goodbyes are tearful. The pioneers slightly hesitant at the final moments before boarding.
Why would the king want to establish a colony in Virginia?
So that we can build homes in the new world. To spread the true word of God.
On the other hand, it could be reports from Raleigh's expedition of gold and many valuable furs. The fact that a flag of England planted in these new regions would extend his power and influence has not been overlooked by the king. The intrepid band set sail on the Susan Constant, the Godspeed, and the Discovery. 4 stormy months of sailing the Atlantic under the command of Captain Christopher Newport brings them to the Chesapeake Bay, and a boat is brought ashore. A tablet at the base of the oldest lighthouse in America now tells the simple tale.
Near this spot landed April 26, 1607, Captain Gabriel Archer Christopher Newport, Honorable George S. Percy, Bartholomew Gosnold, Edward Maria Wingfield, with 25 others who called the place Cape Henry. Planted across April 29, 1607.
Sailing up the Chesapeake to a broad river quickly named the James for the king, the settlers establish a home site on a peninsula of land. Jamestown Colony is to be the beginning of a great adventure. A place beset by Indian attacks, swamp mosquitoes, and disease. Captain John Smith explores the region, and there what we know today as Yorktown meets Chief Powhatan and his young daughter, Pocahontas. It is she who will bring food and the methods of planting to the settlers. It is Pocahontas who, in the words of Smith,
preserved the colony from death and famine and utter confusion.
Pocahontas and John Rolfe marry. Growing golden leaves of tobacco replaces the desire to find gold. The colonists turn to the establishment of their government. Today, an old brick tower still stands where the settlers first received a new set of laws that provided for 2 houses of government, one selected by Great Britain and the other representative house called the House of Burgesses, whose members were chosen by the colonists. These 2 houses meet and approve the first written constitution in the New World. This document and this form of government were to be the focal point of controversy for years to come. 50 years have passed, hard and struggling years for the colonists. Nathaniel Bacon has led a revolt of 400 planters against the English governor who refused to protect the frontier settlements being carved out of the pine forest. The capital at Jamestown was left a smoldering ruin. The state house is rebuilt only to burn again in 1698. There was nowhere for the government of the New World to meet.
As governor of the Virginia colony, I urge you to move our capital to Middle Plantation, where clear and crystal springs burst from champagne soil.
Where Jamestown mosquitoes and marsh fever no longer wait for weary bodies.
And we shall call it Williamsburg, in honor of the most sovereign William III, King of England and Lord of the colonies.
With the coming of the lawmakers to Williamsburg, the town becomes the social center of the colony. The College of William and Mary is founded. Slaves imported to the plantations and farms take over much of the manual labor from the landowners. And there is opportunity for public times of horse racing, games, and elegant dances. But it is not all dances and song in Williamsburg. Thinking men become dissatisfied with foreign rule. They are eager to rule themselves and establish their own law. The king decrees,
"And there shall be imposed a tax on every legal document and newspaper published within the colony of Virginia."
The House of Burgesses meets, and Patrick Henry speaks out.
"Caesar had his Brutus, Charles the First is Cromwell, and George the Third makes profit by their example.
This son is treason.
If this be treason, make the most of it."
The resolution against the King's Stamp Act passes by a majority of one. Public notices begin to appear on street corners and doors.
"The first man that either distributes or makes use of stamp paper, let him take care of his house, person, and effects. Vox populi."
The next 10 years pass quickly for the men of Virginia colony. Smarting from even more oppressive legislation, they begin fashioning a new ideal of rights and privileges of free men. The spark that finally fans the flames to war comes from a small white church called St. John's. It sits atop a hill in the city of Richmond, some 50 miles away from the Williamsburg capital. England has already landed armed troops in the colony. It is 1775. Patrick Henry proclaims,
"Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death."
Thomas Jefferson, Patrick Henry, Peyton Randolph, Richard Henry Lee, and George Wythe are elected delegates to the Continental Congress. In Williamsburg, George Mason, gentleman farmer, flower grower, and patriot with a pen, drafts a Constitution of Virginia. Included in it is the Virginia Bill of Rights. Richard Henry Lee, the brilliant orator from Virginia, rises from his seat at the Continental Congress in Philadelphia and calls for a declaration of independence from Great Britain. The Congress appoints Thomas Jefferson from Virginia, one of its youngest members, to serve as chairman of the committee to draw up the document.
"A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to separation."
July 4th, the United States of America declares that it is a free and independent country, and the men of the Continental Army grip their muskets tighter as they face an all-out revolution against the British might. George Washington, a Virginian, is the commander-in-chief for 8 years.
"A marine and naval force must be established.
The battle at the Canadian border is going badly.
Valley Forge.
Lafayette has taken command of the American forces in Virginia.
Cornwallis has arrived at Yorktown from North Carolina."
Fire! At tiny Yorktown, Virginia, the climax of the Revolutionary War takes place. Cornwallis is surrounded by Lafayette, pounded by the French fleet on the York River, and hounded by General Washington, who has slipped away from the Redcoats at New York. After a three-week battle, Cornwallis surrenders. The struggle for independence is ended. British representatives meet in Paris to set the terms of peace. All the land from north of Florida to Canada as far west as the Mississippi is the new United States of America. Washington becomes the president of the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, hammering out the form of the newly won liberties on Mason and Madison of Virginia. By 1788, the Constitution is adopted, and Mason urges Madison to add 10 amendments to the document. The Bill of Rights, based in large measure on the original Virginia document, is made a part of the newly established laws.
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, abridging the freedom of speech, of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble.
Washington leaves his home in Virginia to become the first president of the United States. Jefferson, founder and builder of the University of Virginia, is appointed Secretary of State. He carves out of the Old Dominion soil the District of Columbia and sees the state capital move to Richmond into a building he designed. Washington serves 8 years, spurns the third term offered him, and retires to his home in Mount Vernon. Jefferson becomes president, the first to take office in the nation's new capital.
Let us restore to social intercourse that harmony and affection without which liberty and even life itself are but dreary things.
Jefferson serves 2 terms. He sends Monroe to negotiate with Napoleon in France and doubles the size of the United States by the Louisiana Purchase. A Virginian, William Clark, is assigned to explore the new area with Meriwether Lewis. A 2-year journey takes them beyond the Rocky Mountains. Jefferson sees the Old Dominion give up the Illinois country, forming Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, Michigan, Wisconsin, and parts of Minnesota, Kentucky, and West Virginia. Virginia becomes the mother of states. The 4th president of the United States takes office, James Madison of Montpelier in Orange County. He faces another war with Great Britain, a war fought on the seas, the Chesapeake Bay, and the Potomac River. The War of 1812 leaves Washington a smoldering capital. The British retreat, and the nation turns again to building and to restoring the confidence of the American people. John Marshall from Prince William County does more to shape the form of the American dream. As Chief Justice, he explains the implications of the Constitution, defines property rights, and expands the government's control over interstate commerce. When the Liberty Bell tolls his death, it cracks, never to ring again. Monroe becomes president. His famous doctrine, called by some the Second Declaration of Independence, speaks out strongly.
The American continents are henceforth not to be considered as subjects for future colonization by any European powers.
Our policy in regard to Europe remains the same, which is not to interfere in the internal concerns of any of its powers.
Steele's Tavern, Virginia, 1831. The state of Virginia is one of the largest producers of wheat in the world. A young, broad-shouldered man with tailcoat blowing in the breeze doffs his top hat and a dray horse paws the ground. A crude machine starts to turn, and a turning point for agriculture is reached. Cyrus Hall McCormick of Rockbridge County demonstrates that his blacksmith skills can produce a wheat harvesting machine called a reaper, which will revolutionize agriculture. Virginia provides another president for the United States. William Henry Harrison becomes the fifth native son of the Old Dominion to serve in the nation's highest office. Born at Berkeley, site of the first Thanksgiving in America, Harrison defeats Indian Chief Tecumseh at the Tippecanoe River in Indiana, a victory which produces the famous political slogan,
Tippecanoe and Tyler too!
Harrison dies after serving 1 month. John Tyler of Charles City County becomes the first vice president of the United States to be elevated to the presidency while in office. He settles the major boundary dispute between Canada and the United States, and in the closing hours of his term brings the Republic of Texas, which had Virginian Sam Houston as president, into the Union as the 28th state. Old Rough and Ready, Zachary Taylor, born in Orange County, Virginia, and hero of the Mexican War, becomes the United States' 12th president in 1849. A year after taking office, he attends the cornerstone-laying ceremony for the Washington statue in Richmond. That summer, he dies just a few hours after dedicating the Washington Monument in the District of Columbia. Nine years later, John Brown leads his abortive raid on the armory at Harper's Ferry. A young colonel, Robert E. Lee, with a band of Marines, captures the revolutionists. Lee will soon fight again on Virginia soil, leading a different group of men and for a much different purpose.
Lincoln is elected.
Seven southern states secede.
Jefferson Davis is elected president of the Confederacy.
Virginia votes to remain with the Union.
The garrison at Fort Sumter is fired upon.
Lincoln calls for troops to fight the rebellion.
Virginia decides that she is not able to send her soldiers to fight against the other southern states.
The capital of the Confederacy is moved to Richmond.
And for 4 years, Virginia's soil will be a battleground.
Lee is made commander of naval and military forces of Virginia.
Blue meets gray for the first time at Manassas in Prince William County.
Look! There's Jackson's brigade, standing like a stone wall!
Signal flags are used to warn the Confederates of attacks.
We have an idea, sir. Hot air-filled balloons can give us a better chance to see them coming sooner.
By covering the hull of the Merrimack with steel from Predators, we can break the blockade of Hampton Roads.
Brilliant tactical maneuvers by Jackson and Lee succeed in Virginia, but attempts to make thrusts into the north are defeated. Lee digs in at Petersburg. The battle rages across swampland and in thick pine forests. For the Confederacy, outmanned and outproduced by the northern states, it becomes only a matter of time. Richmond falls, and Davis evacuates the capital to Danville in southwest Virginia. On Palm Sunday at Appomattox, the last battle line forms. Lee surrenders.
The war being at an end, I believe it the duty of everyone to reunite in the restoration of the country and the reestablishment of peace and harmony.
Virginia is left burned, barren. One report of the time,
the desolation of the country from Alexandria to near Charlottesville is horrible to behold.
At Petersburg, farmers are stopped in trying to plow their fields by the metal embedded in the ground.
A crow cannot fly over the Shenandoah Valley without carrying his rations with him.
It is again time for rebuilding and for restoring the confidence of the American people. But first, Virginia and the nation must undergo 6 long years of agonizing economic depression. Virginia begins to reshape her place in the nation. Farms become more mechanized. Cities start to grow. Women are employed in the manufacturing of cheroots in the cigarette and tobacco factories of the capital city. A naval great returns to Virginia to become a professor at VMI. A Fredericksburg lad had been appointed by Sam Houston to West Point as a midshipman. Long hours of work over the old logbooks of the Navy Department glean important information that enables him to predict wind and ocean tide. The pathfinder of the seas, Matthew Fontaine Maury, cuts the average sailing time from New York to San Francisco by almost 50 days. He also selects the route of the first transatlantic cable. Maury is honored by a granite tablet at Goshen Pass.
Every mariner for countless ages, as he takes his chart to shape his course across the sea, will think of thee.
Higher education continues to expand in the state, as Virginia Polytechnic Institute is founded as the Old Dominion's first land-grant college. Education is also the aim of Booker T. Washington as he walks and begs rides on a 500-mile journey to Tidewater, arriving at Hampton Institute with only 50 cents in his pocket. 10 years later, he will journey to Alabama to establish a center of higher education, Tuskegee Institute.
I have a theory that the fever can be caused by mosquitoes.
A young Army major, a doctor from Gloucester County, assigned to Cuba to find a cure for yellow fever.
If we could get men to volunteer to be bitten by mosquitoes that had already bitten the yellow fever...
Major Walter Reed carries out his experiment and begins the fight against the dreaded yellow fever. His war on this enemy of man is victorious, and armed with this knowledge, the Panama Canal is completed. Woodrow Wilson, Stanton native, becomes the 8th president of the United States from Virginia. His focus is on domestic affairs, economic reform, and the conservation of natural resources.
This is not a day of triumph. It is a day of dedication. I summon all patriotic, all forward-looking men to my side.
He is later to summon many men for a different task on foreign soil. Senator Carter Glass of Virginia pens the legislation that provides much-needed banking reform. The Federal Reserve System is established. Wilson breaks with a century-old tradition and begins addressing the Congress in person to press for domestic legislation. He quickly gets approval for a Federal Trade Commission and new antitrust legislation. He also gains federal dollar matching grants for state projects in highways and education. Border assaults from Mexico and Pancho Villa become secondary considerations as Wilson and the entire nation are drawn into international involvements. The imperial rivalry of European powers soon spreads into all-out war.
Archduke Francis Ferdinand is assassinated.
Wilson pleads for neutrality.
The Germans establish a submarine blockade.
Wilson sends his leading envoy to Europe on the Lusitania.
Short weeks later, the Lusitania is sunk by German submarines, and more than 100 Americans are dead. Wilson begins his second term and prepares the nation for war. April 1917.
For the ultimate peace of the world and for the liberation of its peoples. The world must be made safe for democracy. Its peace must be planted upon the tested foundations of political liberty.
In this war, Virginia would not be a battleground, but the blood of her men would again soak the soil, this time in the forests of Europe. The main troops from Virginia are in the 80th Division. Undertrained and ill-equipped, the Blue Ridge Division distinguishes itself at Meuse-Argonne, one of the bloodiest battles of the war. Their emblem, a white shield with three blue mountains, shines proudly from the shoulders of Virginia's doughboys. 1 year and 7 months after the Holocaust begins, there is peace again. Wilson goes to the peace conference in Versailles. While gone, Congress begins dismantling his plans for a League of Nations. Wilson returns to the White House and suffers a stroke. The Senate refuses to ratify the Versailles Treaty. Wilson appeals directly to the people. The arduous schedule further weakens him. Just before his death, he says,
"I can predict with absolute certainty that within another generation, there will be another world war if the nations of the world do not concert the method by which to prevent it."
Recovery is quick. Virginia having mobilized for war, her industrial centers continue to produce a new prosperity for the American people.
14 ships are launched in a single day at Newport News.
Lieutenant Commander Richard Byrd becomes the first transatlantic airmail pilot just a few short weeks after Lindbergh's flight.
Later, he will investigate the icy wastes of the South Pole, establish Little America, and make the first flight over the pole. In Virginia and the whole nation, the 20s war. The Depression. Long lines for bread, for jobs. Just lines everywhere. As Will Rogers said,
"All the distinction of being the only nation in the history of the world that ever went to the poorhouse in an automobile."
Virginians and most of the nation attached their hopes to a new leader, Franklin Roosevelt. March
4, 1933. "Our greatest primary task is to put people to work. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror, which paralyzes needed effort to convert retreat into advance."
Byrd again explores the South Pole. He sets sail from the Old Dominion and claims for the United States a land as large as the combined Atlantic seaboard states from Maine to Georgia. The sounds issuing from Europe soon change the course of history again. The rival states of Europe clash and throw manpower and machines into war. The president speaks in Charlottesville.
"On this 10th day of June, 1940, the hand that held the dagger has struck it into the back of its neighbor."
Tensions escalate. Diplomatic relations strain to the breaking point. November 16th, 1941. Children of Virginia do not pass through the doors of their classrooms. They are occupied by men between 21 and 35 who sit awkwardly behind small desks filling out government forms. They are signing up to be selectees for training camps.
"Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy, the United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, we will gain the inevitable triumph. So help us God."
The people of Virginia answer the call.
The first state defense council in the nation is formed.
The Virginia Protective Force,
the Virginia Reserve Militia, is established.
The Canine Training Corps Center is built at Front Royal.
Virginia Military Institute sends leaders to every major battlefront.
Railroads in the state become a key to defense operations.
Mineral resources in Virginia are earmarked for war production.
Airfields spring up in the Virginia countryside. The Hampton Roads Harbor is protected. The York River becomes a major naval weapons station. Virginia radio stations keep their transmitters operating all night with the sound of a ticking clock as a signal to the rest of the nation that all's well on the East Coast. Thousands of young men from Virginia make the supreme sacrifice.
This is Supreme Headquarters, Allied Expeditionary Force, General Dwight D. Eisenhower.
People of Western Europe, a landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force. This landing is part of the concerted United Nations plan for the liberation of Europe.
The sacrifice, the metal, the machines, the men eventually crushed the Axis powers. First to Europe, then 3 months later, the Far East.
At 2:41 a.m., at General Eisenhower's headquarters, the designated head of the German state signed the act of unconditional surrender of all German land, sea, and air forces in Europe to the Allied Expeditionary Force.
Let us pray that peace be now restored to the world, and that God will preserve it always. These proceedings are closed.
General George C. Marshall leaves his home in Leesburg to become envoy to China and later Secretary of State. He devises a program of aid for the people of Europe called the Marshall Plan. The federal government has outgrown the district and is overflowed into Virginia with many federal installations. Two of these will shape the future of the world. Wallops Island becomes the major eastern testing ground for rockets. At Langley Field, a group of men train for a strange assignment into uncharted worlds. Virginia becomes the pivot point for the massive urban corridor stretching north to Boston. Builds the world's longest bridge tunnel linking the eastern shore of Virginia to the mainland and constructs the first nuclear-powered carrier, the Enterprise. Men of Virginia are called to defend freedom in Korea and Southeast Asia. The whole world is shocked as the USSR flings a ball of metal into the heavens. The age of Sputnik has arrived. The president speaks.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal, before this decade is out, of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
Our first steps into space begin with rocket probes off Tiny Wallops Island on the eastern shore and from Langley Field, where the astronauts train for a voyage into the blackness of space. 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. What started in Virginia begins anew on the moon.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
In 1607, from England, a man named Christopher Newport guided a tiny band of explorers across a stormy sea to a destination they called Virginia. More than 300 years later, a Virginian named Christopher Craft, from Mission Control, guided two men to a destination they called a Sea of Tranquility. Land of the Virgin Queen, the mother of states, of presidents, ready for whatever the future will bring. She's called Virginia. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Becky Emmett for the Virginia Voice, and we're going to talk about the first Thanksgiving, the one that was held here in Virginia. I'll be reading from a column by Charles Miller of the Richmond Times-Dispatch that was published in 2005, and then a short article from the Berkeley Plantation website. The first Thanksgiving was in Virginia. Settlers held the first Thanksgiving at Berkeley Plantation on December 4, 1619, a year before the Pilgrims arrived at Plymouth. Each first Sunday in November, a Thanksgiving festival is held at the Berkeley Plantation in accordance with documentation from 1619. The event fulfills instructions given to the 38 settlers who arrived on the banks of the James River at Berkeley Hundred, as documented in the proclamation, quote, "We ordain that the day of our ship's arrival at the place assigned for plantation in the land of Virginia shall be yearly and perpetually kept holy as a day of thanksgiving to Almighty God," end quote. The settlers set sail in a ship called the Margaret from the port of Bristol in England, where at the Berkeley Castle funding for the journey was supplied by landowners, including Sir Richard Berkeley and William Throckmorton. Agriculture was going through difficult times, and many people in the area wanted to start a new life for themselves in America, and so they joined the leaders Sir John Woodleaf, George Thorpe, and John Smith, who had planned this remarkable and historic voyage. Although they encountered severe weather that delayed their journey, the landing on December 4, 1619, is well documented by the Virginia Company of London. Charles Berkeley from the Berkeley Castle stressed in his speech for the 1994 Virginia First Thanksgiving Festival that this was the first Thanksgiving to be held on American soil, but it was not officially recognized until President Kennedy's term of office in the 1960s, as beforehand the Pilgrim Fathers were considered to have been the first American settlers to serve Thanksgiving. The Berkeleys, in fact, preceded them. Former Virginia Governor Mills Godwin summarized the setting well in his 1981 remarks. "Berkeley has been a working plantation in Virginia since 1619, and a handsome brick manor house was built here early in the 18th century. Here was born Benjamin Harrison V, a signer of the Declaration of Independence and a post-revolutionary governor of Virginia, and his son, William Henry Harrison, the 9th President of the United States. Today, while privately owned, Berkeley has been magnificently restored and is open to the public as one of America's distinguished historic shrines." Malcolm and Grace Jameson purchased the Berkeley Plantation in 1928, and their son Jamie and his family continue the well-known gracious hospitality to the many visitors each year for the reenactment of the first Thanksgiving. Berkeley is open daily and offers beautiful vistas from its 10 acres of formal terraced boxwood gardens and lawn that extend a quarter mile from the front door of the mansion to the banks of the James River. Clifford Daddy depicts Berkeley and other plantations in his book, The Great Plantation, as an entrepreneurial endeavor. Quote, "These personal domains were built by men who, whatever their weaknesses of the flesh, contained the same ingredients that have built large successes throughout the ages, ambition and energy, self-discipline and resourcefulness, and the power to conceive boldly. For the plantation was, above all things, a most bold concept. It was a private principality, a self-contained world that required a unique amalgam of talents of the very first order," end quote. Perhaps Daddy's remarks about Berkeley Plantation's success can be attributed to the leadership of King James I. His plan established the Virginia Company of London and the Plymouth Company. Indeed, opportunities that offered changes in the economic model for England that led to new world adventures. William J. Carl III, in his comments at the festival in 2005, alluded to the importance of Berkeley Plantation in our economic heritage and as a place that our forefathers and foremothers birthed our great nation. The legacies are innumerable, including a signer of the Declaration of Independence, birthplace and host of presidents, and the composition of taps by General Daniel Butterfield when he was stationed at Berkeley in 1862 with McClellan's Army of the Potomac. So we honor the past but move forward to the future from this great place of history. A perpetual celebration. As we express our gratitude at these Thanksgiving events, so we live out our words by offering thanks, remembering the past, and pledging to continue the great legacy of those before us who celebrated perpetually and look forward to a great future in this free nation. One of the attendees at this year's festival, Peggy Alexander, not only praised Carl's remarks but stated that the entire experience of being at Berkeley Plantation to celebrate the very first Thanksgiving was exceptionally enjoyable in an exquisite setting. Another visitor who came from Ohio remained in her seat to enjoy the historical environment long after the Chickahominy Indians ceased their dances. I am a member of the Berkeley family through my mother's lineage and feel the sense of history each time I visit Berkeley Plantation. Indeed, Berkeley 100 remains a historic treasure in the life of the Commonwealth of Virginia and of the nation. And again, this article is written by Charles Miller in 2005 for the Richmond Times-Dispatch. And at the time of that writing, Charles Miller was the president of the Virginia First Thanksgiving Festival, Incorporated, the foundation responsible for the reenactment of Berkeley Plantation's annual Thanksgiving event. And still, each year on the first Sunday of November, you can celebrate the 1619 landing of the original colonists at Berkeley Plantation. This is a day dedicated to history, food, and fun, with tours of the 1726 mansion, walks in the colorful autumn gardens, and a formal living history program. And from the Berkeley Plantation website, we have Berkeley Plantation cannot be missed. Site of the first official Thanksgiving in 1619, Berkeley was also the birthplace of Benjamin Harrison, a signer of the Declaration of Independence, and President William Henry Harrison called Old Tippecanoe. The original Georgian mansion, built in 1726 of brick fired on the plantation, occupies a beautifully landscaped hilltop site overlooking the historic James River. The date of the building and the initials of the owners, Benjamin Harrison IV and his wife Anne, appear in a date stone over a side door. The mansion is said to be the oldest three-story brick house in Virginia that can prove its date, and first with a pediment roof. The handsome Adam woodwork and the double arches of the great rooms in the mansion were installed by Benjamin Harrison IV in 1790 at the direction of Thomas Jefferson. The rooms in Berkeley are furnished with a magnificent collection of 18th-century antiques. In the basement are the original hand-hewn joists. Also here is a model. Here a model of the early plantation buildings is on view. Berkeley's grounds are the jewel in its crown. Five terraced gardens leading from the house to the James River were dug by hand before the Revolutionary War. Flowers bloom spring through fall. Many hundred-year-old trees grace the restored boxwood garden, offering breathtaking vistas of the James River. On the adjacent farmland, sheep graze lazily in the distant rolling hills along the river on this nearly 1,000-acre plantation. Miles of old-fashioned gravel roads meander through field and forest, pastures, ponds, and river. Wildlife abounds in this delightful, peaceful setting. A small magical woodland glade is nestled in the trees beside an expansive glimpse of the James River and rolling fields. Magnificent sunsets fall over the James River shore. Linger a while at the river's edge and enjoy the gentle lapping water and soft river breezes. And that was from today's website of the Berkeley Plantation. and preceding it, an article from 2005 about the first Thanksgiving at Berkeley Plantation on December 4th in 1619. I'm Becky Emmett for the Virginia Voice. Thank you.